NZ Aero Sports, Icarus Canopies, now Gyro. That's right, we've rebranded, and Gyro is our next generation. It honours our founder, as that's the name we knew him by, but Gyro also marks the start of a new chapter. And not to be biased, but it's going to be fucking epic. Long story short, we're more us than ever. So if you're new to the sport, or even a Sky God Ninja Turtle, welcome. I think our valiant leader Lucy, Gyro's daughter, says it best.
And we still got that fuck yeah attitude. Rebrand, woo!
Rebrand, woo indeed, Lucy. Anyway, head over to gyro.com for more info and get amongst your legends.
I was 19, broke, unemployed, and sold my girlfriend's canopy for drug money. So I thought I better sew her a new one. What a sentence and what a story. This describes the humble yet outrageous beginnings of NZ Aerosports, the home of Icarus Canopies, in the words of our founder himself. From getting a paratrooper toy from his mom, watching parachutes at the DZ as a six-year-old, jumping off the wharf with a parachute made from bedsheets, doing his first jump at 16, sewing his first canopy on a borrowed machine at 19, and starting to sell parachutes out of a garage in 1986, Paul Gyro Martin had an undying love for the sky. Our company started with one man with the wildest of spirits in a true blue sky dream, a renegade. In the time that Gyro created and ran the Icarus Canopies brand until he passed away in 2017, he pushed everything he had to its limits. We miss him and we always will. Gyro is the next generation of NZ Aerosports. It honors our founder, of course, because it was the name we all knew him by, but Gyro the rebrand also marks the start of a new chapter, our next jump. Gyro is the space between sound and silence, art and science, chaos and calm. Gyro is a state of epic tranquility that transcends understanding. That moment, in the door, in free fall, mid-swoop, where nothing but the present exists. A perfect balance of euphoria and thrill. Gyro captures our passion for flying and our commitment to designing break-the-fucking-rules canopies that deliver pilots pure, wild flight.
Hey gang, so I got a new book out. It's called The Upside of Fear, and it's exactly what you think it's about. It's about the good side of, well, getting scared. In it, we talk not only about the science and biology behind fear, but the psychology as well. And it's not just coming from me, it's coming from some of the best in the sport. Omar Al-Hijalon, Jeff Provenzano, Maxine Tate, and so many more have contributed their sometimes terrifying stories to the book to help you overcome your fear. So head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com. You're going to find the link to the book there, as well as the other books. It's available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook right now.
Coming straight from the cockpit, it's another episode of Lunatic Fringe with the fucking pilot.
Ready, set, go. All right, back in the can for another edition of Lunatic Fringe Into the Void and an in-person fun one. This is going to be good because I know there's a lot of good stories coming my way because you've hit a little bit of everything in the skydiving industry. So tell us, who the fuck are you and what do you do?
My name is Murat Leiris.
Murat.
Murat Leiris.
Maha.
Maha. A lot of people read my name in magazines or
Murat.
Or like on the manifest. He's Murat. On the new drop zone, I'd be like, no, it's Murat, but I do pronounce Maha.
Maha.
M-A-H-A.
All right. So, Maha, where are you from?
I'm Brazilian.
From Brazil.
Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
So is Maha like a normal name in
no,
in Brazil?
Not at all, man. I was the only Maha in my high school.
Oh, yeah?
I was in trouble all the time because...
Oh, that's fucked. You can't.
Like, cannot like a João or Marcos or anything like a common name in Brazil. And like, who the fuck is smoke pot on?
Funny.
Funny. Like, Maha is the only guy in the fucking school.
Now, in Brazil, they've got a whole bunch of different cultures, though, right? So there's lots of Portuguese and.
Portuguese, Italian, Syrians, Lebanese. There's
German as well, yeah?
German as well. Like in São Paulo, for example, there's a lot of communities, like the Italian. There's the largest Italian community.
Okay.
That in São Paulo, you know. But I'm from Rio de Janeiro, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a cool nice. Place.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
So being from Brazil, does Brazil have a big skydiving community? I mean,
there's a massive drop zone. That's where I came from. My AFF was 400 kilometers away from my hometown.
Holy shit.
Yeah, there was the only tandem facility in 1990.
Okay.
They have only one tandem rig. And it's the only AFF.
Wow.
Classes.
Okay.
And it was in São Paulo, in Boituva. It was the CNP, Capital National Parachute Association.
Okay.
You know, like, and it was the only civilian airplane for skydivers.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. And then in Rio de Janeiro, it was only military.
Okay.
And then they have one civilian school.
Okay.
But it was from T-10, from round and static line.
Okay.
You know, because most of the military skydiving training in Brazil is in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay.
And then
it's all military stuff.
It's all military stuff. And then all the old guys from military
sure.
open a school. And then all the old gears from the military will be
right.
throwing right. civilian out of the...
So it's kind of like how the states were in like the 70s and all that. It was a surplus military gear.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then one day we come from a party at the age of 17. And we watch a celebrity jumping tandem in São Paulo. So like, man, I want to do this.
Sure.
And then to make a phone call, we drove hours to get to Boituva, and then we get in touch with one of the instructors, and we did a tandem.
Awesome.
And there was three friends, me, João Carlos, and Shadow, to do the tandem. And then we decided on rock, paper, scissors, who was first, who was second, or third, you know. Luckily, I was I was the second one.
Okay, all right.
And then right in my first tandem, well, the camera guy forgot to open the camera, did not record, you
sure.
know what I mean? Free fall, trying to tell the guy, hey, the camera is closed, there's a lens
oh,
cap
no.
on it, man. And then on the opening, I blew one of the lines.
No kidding.
And then my old friend Shadow could not
oh, no.
skydive, you know, like it was
because it was one rig.
Gear, you know. That's how I start breaking a line on the first
fucking
jump. Yeah, man.
Oh, man. Oh, man. So you drive 400 kilometers to go make your first jump.
First jump.
So you didn't get video of it because the guy had a lens cap on. And you busted a line.
And I busted a line.
Wow. And you're not a small guy either. So no. you guys landed the main?
No, it was just no. It was not a steering line.
Okay.
We landed the main, you know.
Okay.
But my friend Shadow, it was the third one in line. He could not jump, and then we drove all the way, buzzed with the adrenaline. I said, we want to do this for a living. I was like, man, imagine 16, 17 years old, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, boy, I want to do this for a living.
Sure.
But me and my old friend, João Carlos, got the buzz of the adrenaline, and my friend Shadow was just sitting in the back seat like, yeah, Maha, you suck. Maha, you suck. We should put you on a last one to go jump out. Yeah,
but poor Shadow.
Poor Shadow. And then Shadow had to do his first tandem 15 years later.
Jesus. So he didn't get
to
jump.
He didn't get to jump.
Oh, no.
And then we did all the jumps, you know what I mean? We traveled, we went to U.S., we did all the process
right
to become a skydiver, to become a professional skydiver,
sure.
You know what I mean? And Shadow was watching and said, okay, what can I do? Pack. And he started packing parachute for
right.
us.
Right.
You
oh,
know?
Man. Yeah. Well, so you do this first tandem and then you drive all the way back home to Rio.
To Rio.
But you got to drive back and forth to do your AFF?
Yep.
Fucking hell, man. That's some dedication.
Oh, man. It was every weekend. Like, every weekend, every time. And sometimes we drove, hours and hours and to get to the São Paulo in Boituva, and it's rain all week long.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of green shit out that way. I'm guessing it rains a little
oh,
bit.
Oh, man, it was 6 to 7 months to finish my FF course.
Oh, man. Now, what did the family think about this?
Well, I get to get my father's signature because I was a minor. And,
sure.
And he was not happy about it, but my mama was super supportive. You know, like she said, go. Is that what you want to do? I don't want to interfere. Go ahead. My mama's really like easygoing on about it because.
Well, that's usually backwards. It's usually the dad that's like, fucking go do it. And the moms are like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, mom was like, oh, no, go. Most of the time, my mom always supporting me and my sister and saying to do whatever we want to do because that's nice. What she was grew up, you know, sure. like it.
Now, before skydiving, was there a plan for you? I mean, you were 17 years old, so you're kind of young.
Go to school, go to a law school. I used to work in a bank. My father started in a bank. My father, before he passed away, he retired as a director of a national bank in Brazil. And then he started so very young in the bank as well. And then when he retires, you know, I started the same way too. I start a mail boy, you know what I mean? Right. And then I become a cashier, and then become a, before I quit, quit the National Bank. It was Banco Nacional. It was the same bank sponsor, Ayrton Senna.
Okay.
You know, before I quit that, I end up as a manager of a collection manager.
Oh, Jesus.
Calling people, say, hey.
You always. Oh, what a.
I was like, you know what?
And you had to be miserable.
I was miserable, man. And the people come, oh, no, my family needs this. We had a problem. And you have it. You're like, no, we're going to, because they have the system of collection, the system in Brazil. And then you put to like your social security on the red, and you cannot get anything.
Yep. Yep.
Nothing can ever have credit card, bank account, or ID, or passport. Or if you get in a blacklist,
sure,
because you don't pay your money.
That's a horrible. All the way around, that's fucking horrible. Because I've been the one that's broke. You know, I've
not
been,
only you, my friend.
Oh yeah, you know, I've been the one with the collection agencies going, "Fucker, pay us our money." You know, and me going, "I don't have a. There's nothing you can get out of me." But it's got to be horrible being the guy making that phone call. Because if you have a heart, any kind of a heart, that's got
to
be fucking.
Yeah, man. They took me only a month to say, don't fuck this shit. I'm going to leave on skydive.
Yeah,
and then I quit. And I went to a small restaurant inside Skydive Resende in Rio de Janeiro. Beautiful place, only 100 kilometers away from Ipanema Beach, where I used to live with the Dropson owner and my uncle, Acrisio. You know what I mean? Like, during the week, doing my school.
Sure.
On the weekend, going back to his end and do my skydiving. It was amazing times.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? In the middle of the, right between Rio and São Paulo, one of the biggest cities in Brazil.
Mm.
And then I was there, 21, with a restaurant.
I mean, come on.
AFF. Instructor, cameraman, coach.
So you got straight into it.
Straight.
So you did your tandem, you did your AFF, and how did you push towards becoming a working skydiver? What'd you do for that?
I started with cameraman.
Like a lot of us.
I was at the drop zone, packing, you know, helping. Because it was back in the 90s, it was not many drop zones open, and in Rio de Janeiro opens, and then they need help.
Sure.
And then and then I came on. I work at Manifest, I work packing, and then later on when the drops on, Cessna drops on, starting moving on.
Mm.
And then the owners of Skydive Resende opened a team, a four-way team, and they need help. And then I start filming.
Nice.
1, 2, 3 jump, and then boom.
That was kind of what happened with me as well. I had found out that, all right, fuck, I'm a skydiver, but now what? Because it's expensive, you know, and I'm like, all right, I got to find a way to jump without destroying myself financially. And everybody said the same thing. Put a fucking camera on your head, go shoot your friends for free, then go shoot your friends for jump tickets, and then try and get a job. But I was lucky because I worked Vegas, and I worked the wind tunnel in Vegas and learned to fly a camera in that tunnel. So they'd let me fly around with my camera helmet shooting video of people, and it was a...
Lucky bastard.
Yeah, man, I was so lucky. Well, I ended up going, and the first ever video of a tandem that I shot was for a drop zone called Outlaw Skydiving in Vegas. And and they fucking full on were, because I had, I'd have to look at my logbook to see the jumps, but I had less than 50 jumps the first time I shot a tandem video.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was like 5 jumps after I shot my first tandem video that me and my buddy at the time, Kevin Love, were doing a 28,000 foot tandem with a fireman shooting video.
Oh my God.
Without any fucking bailout oxygen. We only had supplemental in the plane.
Oh God.
Yeah. And I was too early in the sport and too young and dumb to know just how stupid that jump really was. So I got lucky shooting the video, but I didn't want to be an instructor. Was instructing something you wanted to do?
No, I want to do anything related to skydiving.
Anything.
Anything.
Man. Nice.
You know, like back in the day, you know, it just, whatever take me up out there, I do
nice,
it.
No, nice. No. Yeah. So it started out with video and you were shooting for a 4-way team? Is that what it was?
4-way teams and then tandems right away and then FF. And then right after, in 97, the owner, the drops on owner, my good friend John Carlos, the drops on owner today until today, he get all his money he saved up for his family money. He bought a King Air. And then
wow,
he starting build the drop zone in Rio de Janeiro. And then in 95, 6, 7, until I move out of Brazil, Brazil used to have only Cessnas.
Mm.
And then King Air come up and then changed the whole picture of the sport in Brazil. Man. You know, like AFF, 4-way from São Paulo, Minas Gerais, the other part from northeast of Brazil, we start to come down to Rio de Janeiro, and then we sell on AFF only with video.
Yeah.
To fill it up the plane.
Yeah,
like everybody used to have that mentality of a Cessna, only 5 on board. And now we have like 12 souls on board on the King Air. They fly freaking.
Oh, yeah.
Like a rocket.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like.
And, that's it.
And then, like, I was in every single load. 3 gears. Shadow Man packing for me like crazy, you know, and I was in every single load from load 1 to load 5 until you shut down for fuel.
Yeah.
And then my friend João Carlos implemented the idea to hot fuel.
Yep.
Fucking imagine a man on top of a King Air and there with the, because the tank of the King Air is right behind
just behind the prop.
Yes. The guy sits like a horse, you know what I mean? Yeah. When he's in the horse, one leg is struggling with the freaking tank, and then he's blue, and he bought the fastest pump in America. And then I was like, it took like 15 minutes to fill it up both tanks.
Jesus.
And the pilot inside eating the sandwich and drinking water, you know what I mean? And then boom, another 5-4 loads, you know.
It's crazy, right?
And then crazy. My God, GPS, we didn't have
right?
A cloud, no problem.
Yeah.
GPS, I have more than 1,000 jumps above the cloud and without see the ground.
Jesus.
Deploying in the middle. In the middle of the cloud, there was a wake the clouds and then see the ground and then dump, you know, like it was.
Yeah, I've got a few of those, but not too many. All my jumping back then was in the States, so.
Yeah, States more control, it seems.
A little bit.
But Brazil, we learn a lot of our mistakes, you know, like, and then.
Well, and especially when you're moving at that pace. I had the same thing when I was working for Skydive Las Vegas and just shooting video. We were required as camera guys to have 3 rigs. Because we had to do 3 back-to-backs, and this was fucked. The camera guys had to do 3 back-to-backs and then pack all 3 of their rigs and then get on another 3 and then pack 3. And then at the end of the day, edit all the videos.
Yeah.
Fuck me. Those were the days when you got home and you didn't even make it to your bed. You just passed out on the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
How many nights I was editing videos, bro?
Oh my God. Yeah.
There was no computer or anything. It's just like VHS tapes. You know?
That's
like
it.
Music, 1 foot on the play of the one of the hand on the play of the remote control for the camera and recording the VCR.
You'd get so good at it, though, right?
Oh, man. After 500 of those.
Oh, yeah. Well, it finally got to the point where, because I was the third string cameraman man, when I got hired on there. And a guy by the name of Danny Kuhn and Steve Verner, both of them awesome camera flyers at the time, were the one and two on the Drop Zone. And they had done their time in the editing booth. And we got paid $5 a video to edit, but they were just done with it. Fuck it, we're making enough money. I don't want to edit videos. So I ended up doing all the editing for all three of us. So I'd finish the day, and then I'd go edit like 30-something videos a night. But you'd get so fucking good at it, you would just all of a sudden you're stopping, not even remembering having done the edit, but it's done, perfect, yes, to the same song. I did Lenny Kravitz, Fly Away.
Joe Satriani.
Yeah, man, on like 10,000 fucking videos. And that's
Suicide the Blonde.
Yeah, man, all that tacky shit. And of course, Free Falling. You had to put Free Falling for the slow-mo section that you were required to do. Oh, yeah, all that crap. But hey, it got the bills paid.
Oh, yeah, man. I pay all my coach jumps and my gears, you know. That was always my dream, about to get a new gear in. And,
right.
You know, like, oh, I want a gear, measure my collars and everything. You
right,
know?
Right, right.
Doing that pays off.
Well, and you and I, it sounds like we're coming up around the same time, because this is also when shit was really kicking off in the States. The Flyboys and the Free Fly Clowns and Omar.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This is when what we consider to be old-fashioned skydiving, but it was the birth of modern skydiving, you know, delivering pizzas all over the sky.
Yeah.
But the most amazing shit. What a great time to start jumping, right?
Oh, my God.
And the canopies. Fuck, you remember when you everybody wanted a stiletto, and the manufacturer put out that you have to have 500 jumps.
Yep, 500 jumps.
Which, of course, made every fuck stick with 100 jumps desperately want one of those canopies, because if you had to have 500, it must be so badass.
Yeah, I don't know you in America, but in Brazil, you used to have the racers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then everybody wants to have the smallest gear.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And then when the people, like, when put it, like, Neo S.
Yep.
Like, over the shoulder, you know, small, and everybody was shoving a freaking stiletto 103, 120.
Well, that was the thing, right? Is you wanted the smallest goddamn rig in the world because it made you look like a badass. It's not because it was practical in any way. If anything, the smaller rigs that I jumped, come deployment time, I'm having to reach halfway up my fucking back to get your pilot
chute.
Not comfortable. Well, and at some point, I think everybody woke up and went, oh, I shouldn't have a sub 100 square foot reserve, maybe.
Yeah.
You know,
damn my body.
When you're 220 rolling out the door and you've, you know, got a teeny itty bitty little reserve, maybe that's not such a good idea.
No, not a smart time either, but
yeah,
we all learned from that.
We sure as hell did. Now, how did you end up leaving Brazil and going to the States?
Yeah, in 1999, the economy started very bad in Brazil, you know, like the presidents and the change of in the right and left, you know, Republicans and fucking whatever, you know. And then I was doing living a life, king year, doing fucking 20 loads on the weekend, and I was making a lot of money with the restaurant in the Drop Zone, coaching in the FF jumps, tandems. And I was already in Brazil, in US, in the land before.
Mm.
When I finished my FF in 91, I grabbed all my savings, family savings, and I traveled with João Carlos, the guy I jumped tandem for the first time.
Nice.
To go see Disneyland, Mickey Mouse. Mom and dad was like, yeah, go.
All right.
You know, yeah, Disneyland, a dream of any Brazilian.
Sure.
And then I never saw it.
Never saw Disneyland?
Disneyland.
You got stuck in the land.
We stuck in the land. And we did like 35 101 basic body fly with Tom Pires before he passed away.
Okay.
I was the first Brazilian doing the basic body fly training camp with Tom Pires and Ricardo Petena.
Wow.
And we did.
Sure.
When we got back to Brazil, I was flying better than them with a new technique,
sure,
the box position.
Right.
Better than my AFF instructor.
Did you tell Mom and Dad what a great time you had with Mickey Mouse?
Of course. No, he would stop in front of Magic Kingdom and take a photo of. You mean my buddy?
Of course.
In front of Magic Kingdom.
Of course, you'd have to.
Yeah, you know, it then after that, I met the Drop Zone owner because we are like friends with Ricardo. Ricardo was already live
right
in the land, and then we become friends. And one of the trips, Bob Howlett and Mike McGowan, my dog.
McGowan, yeah.
And Ricardo came to Brazil to do some seminar, and they jumped out of a King Air in my home Drop Zone. We had a chance to hang out, had a chance to hang out with those sky gods,
right,
you know, and become friends. We took them to samba in Brazil, you know, a little party,
right,
you know. And in 97, I was part of the Rio de Janeiro national team.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sponsored by the national team, the national federation.
Okay.
And we saved top money, and we went to the land to do a training camp, and they fly the Skyvan, the only Skyvan
right
in the world. Ride with the South African team, like in Arizona, did not have the Skyventure yet.
Mm.
The only Skyventure was the first was Orlando Skyventure.
Sure, sure.
And we went there. We did like 10 hours at the wind tunnel, and then we did 50 jumps.
Oh, wow.
At the Skydive Land, and then become friends, you know?
Sure.
And then we did another season, another year. And then 97, 89, the economy started to crash.
Right.
And then when you have the taste, man.
Sure. Yeah, you got to get back there.
Like, say I could not stay here anymore. Like, I put my backpack, grab my camera, and not even contact Bob Hollett. I just...
Well, you knew, though. But I mean, that's the great thing about skydiving, right?
Yeah.
I mean, once you're in the community, there's somewhere for you to go.
Yes.
For sure. And especially if it's back to a drop zone that you've done that much time and you've spent that much time with that specific part of the community, you can kind of show up and go, okay, how do I get started? Where do I go? So would you go out there and start shooting video and doing tandems and stuff?
No, man. Or? I was doing sit in a chair over there, wait for my time.
Right.
Become friends with Jimmy Tranter, Hunter Roberts, Gus Wing, Norman Kent, like Marianne Kelly. I see all this phenomenon, like all Skydive magazine, the pictures of all these guys, you know, sit over there and wait my time. You
sure.
know, like, and slowly, 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 I pack, I clean plane, cut the grass,
right,
whatever. Helping moving houses, you know, making friends,
sure.
being friendly, you know, and
I think that's a phenomenon on every single drop zone on the planet. Is chances are the guy sweeping the hangar or mowing the lawn or walking the fucking dog is probably the most excited skydiver on that drop zone. We had a guy who I've actually had on the podcast, a guy by the name of Will, that was a hardcore jumper. Him and Selwyn Facey were jumping together as a team at Skydive Cross Keys. And those two were the ones that were cleaning up the drop zone. And they would be the first ones up in the morning, no matter how big the party was the night before, emptying garbage cans, sweeping the hangar, doing, and they were on every fucking load. They were just psyched to be jumping. And it was amazing to see, because if you'd asked most of the staff, would you clean the hangar to be able to jump? Fuck no. No way. You know, but these guys were so motivated. You have to be. But I suppose there's extra motivation for you because you've left home to chase this. I mean, that's a big decision.
Yeah, it was not easy, you know, when you have a, you know, good life after you get to taste.
Sure.
You know, to have nice things, to do good things, you know.
Sure.
And then suddenly you are stuck and then there's no flight, there's no money,
yeah.
there's no food on the table, you know, asking for to hitchhike to go back to see Amada in Rio de Janeiro. It was really dramatic for me. And then luckily I have some friends that helped me with my airline ticket.
Nice.
I arrived in U.S. with $100 in my pocket, bro.
Holy shit.
And then like in that ticket is like for 30 days.
Right.
And if nothing happened, I'll be going back home.
Right.
You know, I say, Mom, that's my car. That's the power of attorney.
Right.
Here we go. I'm going to try. If it doesn't happen, I'll be back in 30 days.
Now, did you, obviously it worked out because you ended up staying there, but did you overstay your visa?
Never.
Really?
I have no idea how lucky I was.
Holy shit.
Man, I get there, and the first week it was tough. And then 3 weeks later, I met Nancy from owner of the Jump Shack.
Okay.
And I was a good friend with some Venezuelan friends. Alejandro Ramos, Daniela, Francisco Neri.
Okay.
And then they have Carlos, today is a phenomenal free flyer in U.S. today.
Sure.
It was working Venezuela. And I was having a, like, oh, I'm going to renew my visa to stay longer.
Right.
And then say, hey, Maha, we're going, Venezuela is doing a boogie. Do you want to come and shoot a video for us?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It was my first.
So you were like down to the last couple of days before your visa runs out.
Yeah, exactly, man. Awesome. They're like, sure. And then we travel. And they have Irini from Norway and Pedro Espe, one of our instructors at the Skydiver Land.
Awesome.
And we all went to Venezuela, being treated like rock star. The organizers say, what do you want to do? Do you want to do tandem videos? Or you want to do big waves video? What do you choose? And then my head goes, ching, ching.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to stay with tandems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really? Tandems. And then twin order.
Oh, yeah.
And we are up and down. Like
It's easy. Easy and fun.
And then after 10 jumps of tandems, it's like, oh, can I now go free fly with Alejandro and the guys? Sure. Free fly. Oh, can I film you? Pedro organizing big waves? Boom. Picture. And awesome. Then I come home, pictured on the cover of Skydive Magazine. You know what I mean? Yes. And then I start to build my name.
Sure.
You know, on the community. And then saved up. And then when the visa was about to expire, I was travel a little bit. One time I went to Mexico.
Okay.
On the way back, they stopped me. They put on the room to check all.
Really?
I say, how did you do? They say, no, my father's rich. Look, I skydive around the road.
Right.
I don't need to work. There was one point, the search was so bad. They grabbed my agenda, and they opened like this. Oh, Skydive the Land. He looked at me, the office, immigration office, look at me and said, if I call this number and ask if you're a good employer, they're going to say you're not an employer. So sure, call them. Call them. Luckily, nobody answers.
Well, that's a funny thing. I'm born and raised in California, and I traveled all around the U.S. jumping for a long time, but I worked with more people from more places around the world because it's the U.S. It's been Mecca for skydiving because the weather's generally good. There's a lot of business. But I worked with so many illegal aliens.
Oh, man. Not only you, bro.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody. It was just kind of one of those things. In fact, one of my good friends a lot of people's good friends, named Rob Stanley, was from Canada and jumped in Cross Keys forever. And I think he was illegal the entire time I knew him. I mean, he was just, fuck yeah, I can't get in trouble. I better not get pulled over because I'm not here legally for ages. You know that. So I'm impressed that you never overstayed a visa.
No, I never overstayed a visa. Thanks God, man. I was lucky.
Yeah.
I was lucky. Like, I did not. And it was on point. I have my trailer that the drops on, you know what I mean? And starting to get in, like, very comfortable.
Sure.
And then when it's time to get out, you're like, oh, man, close. Give the key to my old friend Josh. He was illegal as well. 10 years illegal.
Josh, 10 years.
10 years. Josh. Boom. That's the key, man. If I don't come, you have a trailer to stay, bro.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good time, man.
So now where did you do your AFF stuff?
In Brazil.
Okay, so you did that in Brazil. So
in Brazil. I'm not an AFF instructor in the U.S. I'm not USPA AFF instructor.
Okay.
I'm only coach.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So where did you meet Sparkles? For anybody that doesn't know, I call his wife Sparkles.
Oh, man, this is a good story. Like the land, in summertime, it gets low on 408 teams and tandems because it's freaking hot.
Sure.
And then a friend of mine, Josh, that was about to give the trailer.
Right.
And then he went up north of Michigan to do a tandem. When he got there, he got stressed out about the operation because it was 206 and a 182 wide body and a lot of students. And Desmond, the owner of the drop zone, like very particular for everything, video, photo, the way to treat the customer. They would have like too much for Josh.
Mm.
And he called me and I was like in Thailand, no jobs, you know, no work, no money. Maha, I have a great opportunity for you.
Hey, you're welcome, fuck you.
He left before I arrived.
Of course he did. Oh, no.
That's why I arrived in Michigan. I said, where is Josh? No, he left 3 days ago. But 3 days ago, he told me to come here.
Yep.
And then I started drop zone with work with video with that. And Jennifer was start skydive, you know. And then we click, we become friends.
Mm.
That was the first season. And then the second season, I went back there and we hooked up.
So it didn't go so bad.
No.
You didn't have a problem with the owner?
No, I never have a problem with him. I have a problem with the airport manager because I was swooping the tower all the time I come down. Until he come and he shouting Des, and Des coming to me and he grounded me for a week because I was swooping the tower.
Really?
Oh yeah, that was like I was going.
So Jennifer was a skydiver at the time.
No, Jennifer has 240 jumps.
Really?
Bro. Yeah.
I never would have guessed.
Yeah.
I've never seen her under nylon. Yeah. Sparkles, you've been holding out on me. I didn't know she jumped.
Yeah, she jumps, man. And then we hooked up, you know, we make some jumps together. I started to coach her seat fly, you know, and we one time we went to Traverse Heat, the place she used to work and live.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was funny story, you know, and like when I proposed her, I said, listen, I'm almost about to get illegal in the country. It was like a week, 2 weeks until I got to start to get the status of illegal immigrant.
All right.
And then they say, and then I already visited her, I was hooking up and know. And then she told me, I say, listen, I'm going to stay illegal in this country. I love you. I want to be with you. I don't give a fuck about immigration. If I'm going to be illegal here, quiet. No, she's like, no. As American from up north, I said, no, you cannot do that.
All right.
I said, I have an idea. Do you love your job? She's like, I hate my job. She was a dental hygienist.
Oh, Jesus. Now that I can imagine.
Yeah, she's a dental hygienist. Have her own house. Her life was set. Like,
and then you showed up.
I'm like, do you love skydives? Like, I love skydives. Do you love your job? I hate my job. What about the 6 months of winter time you have here? You cannot see the sun. It's like, I hate the weather. Say, marry me. Move to the land. I have nothing to offer.
That's a great proposal.
I have a little house. I have a little trailer. One bedroom, little trailer, you know. It's very simple. You marry me, I stay legal, stay together. And then I sing it to her. Dun, 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 dun. Instead, I confused in my head.
That's awesome.
He's like, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, wrong one.
Wrong one.
Yeah, you're singing the Death March.
Death March.
Now, did you have the dreadlocks back then?
Yeah, I have the dreadlocks.
So she's a fan of the dreadlocks.
She's a fan of the dreadlocks.
Well, those things come down to your ass about now, don't they?
Yeah, man, it's been 20 years.
Yeah, because you've always got them up.
Yeah.
What was the choice with the dreadlocks? Did it start with the whole skydiving thing and kind of that vibe?
No, because I work in the bank. I have to have a clean shave, clean cut.
Sure.
You know, and then I decide to become a skydiver, it is to have the clean shave, the clean cut. And then one in 1999 for the millennium, the change of the millennium.
Right, right.
Me and my old friend Shadow was super drunk, high shit on the beach.
Awesome.
It is the millennium. Let's shave. And then we shave zeros.
Right.
And let's never cut our hair again and grow dreadlocks. You say, I'm on it.
Nice.
Let's change our perspective of
Well, and this was also too. This was the still the years of like Charles Bryan.
Yeah.
When he's Free Fly Clowns and the iconic videos, the Chronicles videos where he's got the mask on and he's flying with the dreads behind him and the hockey jerseys and shit. That was an iconic look. We came up during the, I hate to call it the dirtbag skydiving phase, but it was back when your jumpsuit and rig were dirty. Yeah. That meant you were a good skydiver.
I'm on that video. You know that?
Are you really?
Yes.
No shit. Yes, you're one of the trackers in that.
Not tracks, but.
The flockers.
No.
Nope.
1 year, we took the King Air to Espírito Santo to organize a boog. That's what happened. King Air was the only private turbo engine airplane for skydiving in Brazil. All the drop zones, I was hiring the King Air.
Sure.
And then João Carlos, my good friend, my brother, you know, he was taking the King Air all over Brazil for boogie, and then he take everything with him. Cameraman, manifest, PA system, dog, motorcycle inside the King, and we travel and crazy. Most of the time we were overweight.
Sure, oh yeah.
And then like some landing area, some airport, the runways are short. You know what happened?
Tell me you jumped out.
Yes, many times. How many times?
We're too heavy, everybody out. We're
everybody out. How many times you arrive in Espírito Santo for boogie, and then low pass, sometimes even 13,000 feet pass.
Yeah, yeah.
Open the door, we climb out, we close the door of the King Air, and then three, four of us.
And now he's not overweight.
Not overweight.
Oh, that's good. Dude, that's perfect.
That was a great time, you know.
That is a skydiver fucking fix to that. So where did you end up in that?
And then there was a boog in Vitória do Espírito Santo. And then Charles Bryan was invited to come as a coach and a load organize with Sabiar. And it was the beginning of the basing jump.
Yeah, yeah.
Life in U.S. everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
And then they had in Espírito Santo, there's a bridge over the water, 80 meters.
Oh, wow.
Bridge. And they when the boogie finished, it was time the party start. And then like, oh yeah, Sabier, André, one of our friends, the one of the first base jumper in Brazil, is going to jump out of the third bridge in Vitória. And I'm inside watching them packing, you know, like, oh man, I want to do this too. And I look like on the side of the as a decoration in the living room, there was a Wonder Hog.
Nice.
With a cruise light from France.
Right.
Inside. And I look, can I use that? Sabia, Charles. Can I use that gear to jump with you guys? It's above the water.
Right.
Sure. Me and my friends tried to figure it out. We moved the reserve. We packed the cruise light without the PCA attached.
Right.
You know, all in the bag. We leave the bag with Sabia on the top. It was the first one out. Direct bag from the... And then become on the tape.
Hey,
if you look at the Chronicles 2.
I'm going to have to watch that again because I can picture the exact section that you're talking about, but I want to see that again.
Yeah, like I have the afro, was not dreadlocks yet. There was an afro guy jump out of the bridge.
I think it's funny that you guys shaved your head and decided we're never going to cut our hair again, kind of to get away from the clean cut stuff. When I had Bill Booth on the podcast, I asked him about the beard, of course, because everybody knows fucking Bill's beard. And it was the same thing. He's like, no, I had to do this, and this my whole life. And I just said, fuck it, I'm never shaving for anybody again. And now we got Bill's amazing beard.
Well, yeah, famous, actually. Man.
Oh, yeah. Well, come on. I mean, well, again, you started your tandems. I don't know if you guys had to watch the video. That fucking video of him sitting there.
Welcome. I'm the president of
a relative workshop. With the horrible wood paneling behind him and that desk and everything.
That was his office.
Yeah.
Until today.
It's funny because I had made... when I was at Cross Keys, I made this poster for him. I took a Lord of the Rings poster and superimposed Bill's face on one of the characters and put parachutes and shit everywhere, and I called it Lord of the Three Rings. And apparently that's still hanging in that office to this day, which I just think is the funniest fucking thing in the world. But I'm sure you had to do the same thing. You'd push play on the VCR to show the people that were getting ready to do the tandems, and every time the picture would cut to him, people are like, what the fuck is ZZ Top is teaching us how to skate? Every time. It was amazing.
Yeah, man.
It was so much fun.
What a good time.
Well, but yeah, so it's funny that you guys have got that parallel as well, and all around that same time, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So you and Sparkles take off to the land.
Take off. Now, first she came before Thanksgiving. You know?
Okay, she visited first.
She visited.
Smart girl.
She visited first, you know what I mean? She came for Thanksgiving, you know, like, and then God bless Bob Hollett, man. That was my favorite times in the land is Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Mm.
By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the drop zone closed. All the picnic table from outside the drop zone, he put in a packing mat.
Mm.
All the families
awesome.
Come from all the states because we all skydive.
Sure.
And the families from skydive for skydive the land come, and he cook the turkey, you know what I mean, wine, and we are all sit as a big family.
Amazing.
And like.
Amazing.
Amazing. You know what I mean? I didn't have my family, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a foreigner, and we all sit together and we talk. Bill Booth come, John LeBlanc come, John LeBlanc's family, everybody's family, the owner industry, the owner of the Neptunes, all the families.
Sure, sure.
The community come, and then we sit and we celebrate Thanksgiving at the drop zone. And then Faye had a chance to come.
How awesome is that? What a great introduction to something like that. I mean, she was a jumper, but to get that kind of a huge introduction to the real outside community of it, that's
yes,
amazing.
Yes, it was. And plus, she had a chance to jump out for the sky van.
Right?
She's like, oh my God, I can't stand up on this plane. And
awesome.
Then we jump a few times out of the sky van, you know, and then she was a jumper from the 206.
Nice, yeah.
But when you talk to her about the 206, she loved the 206 because she was feeling more powerful because they have a rolling door,
nice.
You know, to climb out the 206.
Well, I don't know about you, but I always enjoyed jumping the Cessnas. The only thing I didn't like about the Cessna was the ride to altitude.
Yeah.
But it was a big jungle gym. I mean, I'm sure you, like everybody else that jumped Cessnas, tried to hook their feet over the leading edge of the wing and hang upside down. And the first jump that I ever did, my camera flyer went and hung off the tire, which I still have never seen again to this day. But he was literally double gripped on the rubber of the tire waiting for me to come over the top of him. Because I remember looking down at him thinking, what an idiot. He's hanging from the tire of an airplane, you know. No, I love those things. They were fun.
Yeah, just it was fun, yeah.
The 45 minutes to altitude sucks.
Yeah, but then we after that, we talking a lot. We used to talk three times a day on the phone. And then like, okay.
That's it.
I think I'm ready. And then I flew to Traverse City. She quit her job. She put her condo for sale. All her stuff on the storage unit. We get married in the courthouse.
Awesome.
With my friend Trevor and her friend. I don't remember her friend's name. It was her. And we packed the car she had, a little white Cavalier with a dog. Deland.
Awesome.
On the trailer.
Awesome. Well, now, this was what year?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's been a while.
2003.
And now you're all these years later, and how many kids now?
Two kids.
Boys and girls?
A girl, 13 years old girl, and a 9 years old boy.
Yeah, I see the videos. They're awesome.
Man, love of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So is that what stopped Jennifer from jumping? Because she doesn't jump anymore, does she?
No, she was not dealing with the nylon very well.
Okay.
You know, she used to have a PD7 cells.
Sure.
And then she started jumping the land. And then she started working for Relative Workshop.
Nice.
With Bill Booth and Rose Sigmund.
Nice.
And She got a brand new gear because she worked for a little shop.
Sure.
You had a free gear. She worked for the manufacturer. She got a new gear, new suit. And then when she got a Sabre 2150, she there was nothing feeling.
Gotcha.
It was too fast.
Sure, sure.
And then I said, I'm going to get hurt with this. And then she started to jump less and less and less and less until she like, I want to get kids.
Sure.
And then.
Well, I mean, that's a smart choice, though. I mean, not that she's not a sharp cookie, because she is. To be able to, you know, recognize, hey, this is a little bit above my skill set or my comfort level anyway, and to slowly back it off. And then, of course, the choice to have kids. I'm a big fan of when the kids come around, it's time to reevaluate stuff.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know? You know, and then coming from a small drop zone or when they jump only on the weekend seasoning,
sure.
And then going for intimidate, you know, you're going to a big drop zone.
Oh, yeah.
Of the land, and there are drop zone going on Monday to Monday.
Scary
you
shit.
You know, man, and you see people get hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And you see people dying, you know what I mean? And like, it's intimidating, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. I went from a Cessna drop zone and would do my weekend drives down to Paris Valley. I think I'd probably been in the sport for not quite six months by the time I went to the first big drop zone, which was Paris. And Paris at the time was fucking cranking. You know, I mean, the flyboys were on every other load. And super intimidating. I just wanted to go do a solo and leave me alone.
Yep. You know,
so I can stay away because it's kind of scary. Now, I want to transition into one of the coolest stories that you had told me before, which was you got the chance to do a really super fucking cool jump back home.
Yeah.
I want to hear about this.
Yeah.
So how did this come? Tell everybody, first off, where you got to jump and how it all came about.
2015, I got invited by the president of a school samba in Brazil called Portela.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys are familiar with Brazil is very famous of carnival.
Yeah, yeah.
Party and football.
Yes.
And today it recognizes of the martial art of the world.
Hmm. Absolutely. Jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu, yeah. Correct. And I was home, a good friend of mine, Gipad, called me, say, Maha, I have this opportunity. Is one in a lifetime. We're going to open the carnival of Rio de Janeiro.
Fucking hell.
I say, what? Yes. It's going to be a night jump in the middle of the city. We're going to open the carnival. Do you want to come in? I don't have much to offer. I will pay you accommodation. But you have to be here.
Mm.
All the expenses here, you got to get paid. Man. I work myself around, get the ticket, travel to Brazil, to my home country, after 3.5 years without seeing my country.
Wow.
Arrive on the Wednesday. The jump will be on the Saturday, carnival.
It's insane.
Insane. Absolutely insane. I mean, it was crazy. We arrive. We did, I say, man, I need to do it because I need to jump. I cannot jump my own parachute. They have a Portela gear, Portela parachute, jumpsuit, helmet, everything match the school samba.
Sure.
And we did one jump over the beach just to fly the canopy. We wait 2 days.
Oh, fuck.
And then we went on the Hobson. Two passengers.
Yeah.
No, 4 passengers. Hobson, I don't remember, 24, I don't know.
Mm.
And then we went to Portela Jump.
Right.
At the international, we board the international airport of Rio de Janeiro.
That's awesome.
We didn't have, like, today you see all this fireworks people jumping with. One of the jumpers, Arthur Zanella, he grabbed one of those, you know, 4th of July fireworks.
Mm.
He tied a pull-up cord from performance design. And he grabbed, you know, matches. Oh, no. Matches. And then he glued like 10 matches around the part you light the fireworks for 4th of July.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we have a match inside the sleeve. When you open the canopy, you pull the sleeve, pull the matches out of the sleeve, grab the fireworks from your feet, light the freaking fireworks, and then you install the brakes,
right.
And you're going for land on the avenue in the middle of the city.
Jeez.
With more than 70,000 people watching a life there. And millions of people worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
Watch the television.
How crazy is that?
Oh, my God. Man, I don't know if you had a chance to see the YouTube video.
I've seen the video, yeah. I was blown away.
I land. I was in my knee.
Yeah.
I thank you for the public. Thank you, God. And I start bawling, crying, man. The emotion of people screaming and the people party. Oh, my God.
Well, especially because you hadn't been home for 3.5 years.
Yes.
You've got to miss home because you've been traveling a long, long time. You're like me. A lot of your adult life has been spent moving around.
Correct.
So it's got to be super emotional that you're not just home, but you're home to do something that how many people did that jump?
Well, that was 4.
Yeah, so 4 people on the fucking planet that have ever done what you did. Not to mention, I don't care where you're at, landing in front of 7 people, let alone 70,000 people.
Yeah.
Come on.
And then if you know the samba is a competition between 15 school sambas. And then the last day of the carnival, on Tuesday, that's the champions parade. Only top 4 had a chance to jump again. And then Portela took 2nd place. I had to do it again.
Awesome.
And then I was become friend with the president of Portela.
Mm.
And I told him, man, I want my mother to watch me landing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he got me a VIP pass for my mother. He'd put on a boot on a box right in front of the landing area where I was to land. I come down hot and fast.
Sure.
Landing exactly at the point I was supposed to land. She was in the boot with the eyes this big. I had a chance to do the heart for her.
Sure.
And blow her kiss.
Well,
and that was...
How cool is that considering that out of both your parents, she was the one that supported your dream to go out and skydive.
Yeah.
And here you just, in one skydive in the most spectacular fashion, just validated her choice in the biggest way. That's my son doing what he's dreamed about since he was this big. And it was my permission that got him there.
Yeah.
How fucking cool.
That was, man. That was the highlight of my career. Yeah. One of my highlights of my career, man.
Yeah.
This was...
Hey, isn't it funny? It's not the records or the medals or anything like that. It's stuff like this that seems to be the biggest highlights. The biggest highlights of my career has nothing to do with this jump or that jump specifically, but it's usually community or something that I felt because of a jump.
Yeah.
So this for you being back home and your mom and back in Brazil, I mean, that's fucking
man, I'm crying. Bring me tears to my eyes just to remember that time.
I'll bet.
What you're doing to me, man. Wow.
Well, and how cool, too, for your kids. I mean, they've been born abroad and lived abroad. And how cool is it for them to be able to see dad doing something like that? I mean, that's awesome. That really is. Jen must have been bursting at the seams, too.
Yeah, so she was, like, very proud of myself, you know.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Well, man, I'll tell you what. It's that kind of stuff that makes what we get to do so fucking special.
Yes.
So special. So I always ask people as we get towards the end of the podcast, I want you to give advice to people. And the advice is this. For people just getting started in the sport, what advice do you give to them for what direction to go, how to stay safe? And for old fuckers like us that might be thinking, I don't know if skydiving excites me that much anymore. What advice do you give to them?
Keep your heads out of the water. No, you know, I see a lot of kids today. They are so easy now with wind tunnels every country.
Yeah.
You like they have a freaking wingsuit tunnel now, bro.
Yes, they do.
You can become a sky god in a month if you have the money and time.
Yep.
Keep your heads out of the water. go talk to people like us. Mm. But talk and listening.
Yeah.
Because what I see today, they don't have good listeners.
A lot of them aren't.
They're not good listeners. You try to give them a free advice.
Right.
Back in the day, I have to pay $100 a fucking hour to Tom Paris to teach me box position.
All right.
I'm trying to give them free advice so they can be safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can save his life. I don't give a fuck what I have to say, bro.
What are the old guys? When did you think that that was going to happen?
Yeah, my wife told me the other day, Ma, you are Gus Wing now. I said, no. Yeah, you are Gus Wing now. How many times Gus Wing come to me when I was in the land, try to do a carving. I want to do a 180 degree carving on the stiletto, 120, coming hot.
Right.
And he said, you bozo. You bozo. He gave me so many advices about it. And sure. I was like, oh, yeah, Gus Wing. God bless you so.
It's funny. I mean, I agree with you. I think that a lot of the whole, it seemed like there were more mentors back then. And now there's camps and classes. And you kind of miss that personal one-on-one sometimes with the bigger organizations. That being said, there's a lot of amazing mentors out there and a lot of amazing courses and all that kind of stuff that's spectacular. But yeah, I think you're right. Some of the personalities gotten taken out of some of it.
Yes, it's just like, go hang out with us, you know. Go like back in the day, after the drop zone finish, sit by the bonfire,
yep,
drinking a beer, you know, man, having... Listen to their stories.
It's a big damn deal.
You know, I learned so much.
Well, that was the point behind starting this podcast. It was supposed to be a bonfire chat. Exactly what you'd hear if you sat down next to the bonfire after a day's jump and listening to a couple of people shooting the shit about the day's jumping or whatever the fuck else came up, all obviously tied to the community and skydiving.
Yeah.
So this was kind of that idea. And I get a lot of feedback from either jumpers that have retired and stopped jumping quite a while ago or are just coming up in the sport doing exactly what you're saying, which is listening to the stories. Because one of the coolest things is you have somebody like you or somebody like Omar or Craig Gerard that comes and sits in a fucking toilet with me to have conversations about the good old days, but they're humble and really giving with their time and their experiences and all this stuff. And people learn a lot just about skydivers going, wait a second, that guy's one of the innovators. This guy's a world champion and he's humble and he's nice and he's laughing and having fun. And it becomes this amazing, wait a second, these people are approachable. And it's,
yeah, man,
it's super cool. That's the bonfire thing is a big deal. I think a lot of that seems to have gone by the wayside.
Yeah. It's sad because we don't see that anymore. Sure. You know, like, I wish we have more bonfire. We have more kids around. So,
sure.
You know, like,
sure.
To guide them to be safe.
Absolutely.
You know, take your heads out of the water.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, what's your advice to the old guys that are bored?
Oh, man. A person like me, you say? Don't give up. It's still a good life in skydive community, you know, even with the young punks full of internal time. Full of themselves.
Sure.
You still have every drop shown, you still have old times like me.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
One of the best pieces of advice I had somebody give to the old timers was go find something you suck at. Do something new. Try, you know, get out of your comfort zone. If you're like, you know, a lot of the older jumpers that have never tried a wingsuit, you know, go try wingsuit. If you've never free flied, try free flying. If you've only been a free flyer, go out and try belly stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Try changing it up. Do something a little bit different. And then if you're still burned out on it, well, then it's time to take a break.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good advice.
Yeah.
Do you remember who was that?
I don't. I don't. We're not getting any younger, that's for sure.
No, definitely not.
I just got a real reality check with my age. I had to get a COVID test a little while back just as a precautionary for work stuff. And my COVID test was free because I'm over 50.
Where did you get that?
Right? Yeah, I'm like, and it was funny because the girl at the counter was trying to flatter a little bit and said, oh, you don't look like it. And I'm just shaking my head with my gray beard going, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. I'm like, but this is going to be a milestone. This is the first time I've gotten something free because I'm too old. Well, with that said, Maha, man, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and shoot some shit. I want to get some more stories in the future from you, but I really appreciate your time.
No problem, brother. Thank you very much for having me here in your
All right, brother.
Podcast.
Blue skies.
Blue sky, bro. Black death.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of the Lunatic Fringe Podcast brought to you, as always, by... Well, wait. Not as always, actually. Brought to you now by Gyro. Formerly known as NZero Sports, you'll head to gyro.com for their next-level line of canopies. By Pussfoot, the Extreme Sports Collective. Head over to pussfoot.com to check it out. By Summit Parachute Systems... Check out summitparachutesystems.com to talk to Jarrett Martin and the gang about kick-ass pilot rigs, rigging courses, and more. By Flyaway Indoor Skydiving, go to flyawaytn.com and check out all the cutting-edge stuff to come. By Pure Spectrum CBD, head to purespectrumcbd.com to check out their wide range of CBD products. And as for us, head to the lunaticfringepodcast.com to listen to any of the hundreds of episodes currently available, hit the link for our YouTube channel, pick up your copy of the Lunatic Fringe book or The Accidental Stripper, and get a sneak peek at upcoming guests. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Damn.